Last week we talked about peace of mind, and we talked about happiness and serenity. We talked about a person who could have found equilibrium and what that would have been comprised of. So since the Gemara talked about that, the Gemara now is going to talk about what most people think will give them inner peace and serenity and happiness and equilibrium. What's that? Do not say a cigar. Well, if you ask most people what will give them happiness, joy, equilibrium, serenity, if I was a rich man, right?
But we all know that's not true.
But we all know it's not true, but everybody went and bought lottery tickets now to get $1 billion, even though they'll never be able to spend $1 billion, and they'll be nagged to death by the whole world if they got it. Mm-hmm. And statistically, rich people are any happier than poor people.
But it's easier to be unhappy when you know you got money.
Yeah, it's much easier to be unhappy. It actually is easier to be unhappy. There are more unhappy rich people. Go figure. But this is how human nature is. And most people, despite the fact that they know this to be true, they desperately crave money. So the Gemara today spends some time on the topic of affluence. What is the definition of true affluence? Money cannot be the definition of true affluence, because true affluence should make us feel good.
A man who is happy with his lot.
Oh, this is Ben Zoyma's Mishnah, yes, in the fourth chapter of Pirkei Avos. There is an opinion that one of the teachings of the Gemara is going to follow that, although, of course, the question may well be asked, if the Gemara is but recapitulating the Mishnah, what is the point of the Gemara? So, tonight's journey will begin on page 25b, in the bottom quarter of the page, or maybe it's the bottom fifth of the page. There's a colon, one word in, and then we have an acronym, Tafresh, which stands for Tanu Rabbonon. Our rabbis learned. Eze Oshir. Who is affluent? Who is wealthy? And the Gemara answers. Kol sheyeshloi nachas ruach beoshroi. Anybody who's happy with his wealth. Anybody who is able to enjoy his wealth. Who is wealthy? The one that can enjoy the wealth. That is to say, clearly there are many people who have wealth, but they do not enjoy the wealth. And if you don't enjoy the wealth, what then is the point? What is the problem?
We haven't got what you've got.
I'm just looking to see where you are.
Yeah, you do.
25B?
25B.
B3?
It would be
B3.
Sorry, there's B1, B2, B3. Sounds like the bus system in New York. So, these are the words, Divrei Rabbi Meir. These are the words of Rabbi Meir. Who is wealthy? The person who has nachas from his money. Why does the Gemara have to deal with this question altogether? Why does the Gemara even ask him who is wealthy? Who cares who's wealthy? Why is that an issue? The Gemara is not the book of definitions.
Because the Gemara knows that we care about it, and it's trying to...
We care about a lot of things that the Gemara doesn't talk about. If the Gemara is talking about it, it's because it's something we need to know. Why do we need to know the definition of affluent? Why is it important, from a Yiddishkeit perspective, for us to know what is considered to be wealthy? So Rashi says something very interesting. Ezeh hu ashir, nafkemino lemitrich lahaduri amilsa. The difference would be if somebody decides they want to be wealthy. When do you stop? When do you stop? When did you make it? There's a lot of people who want to be wealthy. It's okay, you want to be wealthy. So what are you going to do? Well, I'm going to go out there and light the world on fire. I'm going to try to get wealthy. Yeah. And when are you going to stop? In other words, at what point do you reach affluence? Slightly stated in another way, slightly restated, what should a person's goal be? Even when we talk about financial success, what should the goal? I want to make $1 million, I want to make $5 million, $10 million, $100 million. How much money do I have to make? At what point they say, you know what, I'm not going to spend the rest of my life making money. Now I'm going to spend the rest of my life enjoying the money. Or a person could say, no, I have $100 million, but the neighbor down the block has $150 million. And the only way I could spend $100 million in my lifetime is if I buy 3 battleships a year. But actually, I don't want to buy battleships. So then what are you making more money for? What do you need it for? That's how human nature is. Human nature is, we must have it. I need more of it. And because I need more of it, and then I'm going to be happy. I don't have enough. That's why. So this is really important for a person to know what his goal in life should be. Okay, your goal in life should be to serve Hashem. That's nice. A person says, I want to serve Hashem as a wealthy person. So what am I reaching for? What is my ultimate destination, my goal? And how do I know if I get there? So Rashi says that's why the question is raised. And the answer is, you should be able to enjoy your wealth.
But if you enjoy making money, and that's an enjoyment.
Yeah, you see, I know, but enjoying making money, the money is a means. The money is a means to an end, Nancy. It's a means to an end. It's a means to an end, and because it's a means to an end, the money can only be enjoyed if we spend it. You cannot wear your money. You cannot eat your money. You cannot swim in your money. You cannot recline on your money. A couch made of dollar bills will not be any more comfortable.
The people I know that have made huge, they also live large.
Good. So they're enjoying their wealth.
Yeah.
Good for them.
But what if you just enjoy the process of your making the money?
It's like enjoying the process of the means, but never getting to the end. What are you going to do with the money?
I don't care.
So what do you need the money for? Why does a person like making it? The whole reason we have money is because it's a means to an end. Do you know why we, the Jewish people, have a custom during Hanukkah to give Hanukkah gelt, not gifts? Do you know why? So the Rebbe explained it like this. He says, the message that we give to children on Hanukkah, which comes from the same language as chinuch, or education, is we teach the child that material things, chiefly money, are but a means to an end. And we can choose how we spend it. So if a child gets a gift, the child doesn't have many options. There aren't many things you can do with the gift. It depends what the gift is. If the gift is an article of clothing, all you can do is wear it. You cannot eat it. You cannot sit on it. You cannot use it to entertain yourself. You can wear it. If it's a toy, well, you can use it to entertain yourself. Don't try to eat it. If it's a musical instrument, you can make music with it. But you can't wear it. Whereas when a child gets money, what can he do with the money? Whatever he or she chooses. He can buy holy books. He can buy himself new tzitzis. She can buy herself a new candlestick. He can give tzedakah. He can give it to somebody who they feel needs it more. They could spend it on candy, whatever you want. It's a message to a child. It's actually a challenge to the child. Hanukkah gelt is the greatest challenge. It is the greatest act of chinuch. We say to the child, you've been doing well in school. You learned Torah assiduously. You were devoted. You got good marks. I'm proud of you. Yeah, we said that first, by the way. That whole idea of rewarding children, it comes from Hanukkah, not from a different faith system. So we rewarded the children because during the story of Hanukkah, it was the children who exhibited extraordinary courage and mettle and inner strength and fortitude in the face of fierce opposition and under fire, and they continued to study Torah. So this became the time when we celebrated the children's achievements. And the Rebbe says, money is the greatest education for a child. Just give the child a few dollars. And said, what can I do with that? Well, that's your choice. I can help you make the choice. I can show you your options, but ultimately you have to choose. So it's part of chinuch, whereas a gift is just a gift. Anyway, getting back to our question here is, what is money? Is it osher? Osher, Rashi uses the word sameach bechelkoi. He's happy with his lot. Ma'at, ma'at, im rav, rav. However much he has. There are people who have oodles of money and are unhappy with it. There are people who have very little money, but what they have, they're very happy with. And therefore, wealth is actually not measured in dollars and cents. A friend of mine posted something on Facebook today. He wrote, I have great news, I won the lottery. Because there's a big thing about a lottery. And he posted a picture of his family. He says, look at my children, they're each worth $1 billion to me. I won the lottery. He did, he's right. That person doesn't have eyes. If he'd have $1 billion, he'd spend $1 billion to get his eyes back. Your eyes are working, Baruch Hashem. Person doesn't have kishkas. He's not able to digest his food. He will spend all the money in the world to be able to get that back. We have that, thank God. So what do you call affluence? The reality is the people that you spoke about who live large, they're not any happier. They're not happy for the large living. They look for new ways to make themselves happy because that's so old hat. That's so 2017. Another jet ski. Eichmer a thrill. So I'm jumping out of a plane and I did that already. I need to do something crazier, something wild, something more incredible, more wild, and then I'm going to be happy for like 6.5 seconds. So you can just be happy now. Just be happy. Just enjoy what you have. You have gifts, enjoy the gifts. Hashem gave us things, enjoy them. I often think to myself that the luxury car of 1950 has less luxury than the economy car of today. And in 1950, the guy driving that luxury car, he was felt like a king, a queen. He was so cool with the radio actually turned on. And his windshield wipers, and he could defrost or whatever it was. Right? And today, an economy car has that, but you feel like a schlepper in an economy car. You're not happy with it. Why? Because everybody else has something more? I mean, is that what it's about? Do we always measure what I have or don't have by virtue of what somebody else doesn't have? If every one of us had one arm and somebody had two arms, he would be a weirdo. But Baruch Hashem, everybody has two arms. Somebody has one hand, he feels he's shortchanged. He's poor. What if everybody had three hands? I mean, we're always judging ourselves and comparing ourselves with others. So Rabbi Meir's words are, listen, you want to be wealthy? Have nachas ruach ba'ashrei. Everybody has wealth. If you can enjoy your wealth, that's called affluence. That's called being wealthy. Yes, Marty.
So Ben Zoyma's approach of who's wealthy, I have a conflict in his approach and this approach.
Okay, so
because Ben Zoyma's approach, he disregards the word wealth, and he said if you're wealthy, if you're content with what you have, whether you're wealthy or not. And wealth is a relative term. I mean, you could be wealthy in your sense, but compared to someone else, you're not. But if you're wealthy, if you're happy or content with what you have, you're wealthy. Here, Rabbi Meir is saying, you're only wealthy if you take pleasure in what you have.
That is correct. So let me just, I want to repeat your question for the benefit of the online viewers. And I want to thank you for raising this, because Rashi does seem to invoke the words of Ben Zoyma, which is found in the fourth chapter of Masechet Avot. And the truth is that there is an enormous question that has to be posed. And the question is, if all Rabbi Meir is doing is repeating the teaching of Ben Zoyma, then what do you mean, Divrei Rabbi Meir? These are not the words of Rabbi Meir. This is not Rabbi Meir's teaching. This is the words of Ben Zoyma. Furthermore, this is not the content that belongs in the Gemara. This is in a Mishnah, which is a whole genre up. It's a different genre of teaching. It doesn't even belong in the Gemara. So when the Gemara comes along and asks a question, hundreds of years after the Mishnah was redacted, so then obviously the point would be that the Gemara is adding something that the Mishnah didn't talk about. And I think on a simple level, you hit it on the head, Marty, when you said that Ben Zoyma doesn't even mention wealth. But everybody say, Zeu Asher, who is wealthy? And he says, Kol HaSemer Bechelke. Anybody's happy with their lot. So really, whether you're wealthy or not, affluent or not, you could be affluent. You could decide to look at yourself as affluent. And that's kind of what I was saying before. Just be happy with your lot. However, it should
be. No, but being happy with your lot is different than being happy with your wealth.
Yes, exactly. And I was going to say that, because being happy with your lot, ultimately, doesn't mean you're wealthy. Everybody would agree. It could be a person that everybody will agree this person is not wealthy. But they're happy with their lot, but not wealthy. The Gemara here is talking about wealth. It's not just talking about the idea of being happy with your lot. What is the definition of wealth per se? And therefore, because of that, the words of Rabbi Meir are different than Ben Zoyma. Ben Zoyma says, how should a person go through life? A person should be happy. What do people want money for? They want to be happy. He says, you want to be happy? And be happy. Be content with what you have. But the Gemara now wants to analyze and define the concept of affluence or of wealth. Affluence and wealth. So they say, so what then, how much affluence could be called affluent? What is the appropriate definition of affluence? And that's where we have a little bit of a difference. You see, the Ben Yehoyada asks a big question. And he says, Haloi heim divrei ben Zayma. This is the words of Ben Zayma, the way Rashi explains it. It's the same words of Ben Zayma. It's not different. It's the same teachings. And he says, even he asks even a bigger question. He says, and if all Rabbi Meir is doing is simply repeating the words of Ben Zayma, then for heaven's sake, why'd you use his words? Why change his words? Why would an Amora, why would a rabbi from the genre of the Talmud, of the Gemara, why would he use his own verbiage when he could simply adopt the sacred syntax of the Mishnah itself? That wouldn't be a better idea. So he wants to say there has to be a difference between the two. It has to be. It cannot be one and the same. And he says, therefore, we are speaking, the Ben Yehoyada says, we are speaking about wealth, specifically. And he says that there are two possibilities within the person who's wealthy. There could be a person who's wealthy and doesn't have a moment of peace. Why not? Because they're enslaved to the money. In his words, he says they're an eved nirza limamoinai. They're an indentured laborer to the money. Their money defines the life for them. Their money controls them. They don't control the money. There was a famous Jewish banker whose name I'm not going to repeat now because it's not such a complimentary thing. He was known to answer the phone in the shower because the deals were coming. He had phones installed, and not in today's day and age. It's a joke technology. This was like serious technology then. To answer a speakerphone in the shower, he would be doing business while he was in the shower. The man didn't have a moment of respite, not a moment of peace. You're going to tell me that's called enjoying your wealth? Who needs that? The Ben Yehoyada says, if you have a lot of money, hire people to do the work for you. Enjoy your wealth. Enjoy it. You want to enjoy it, you can enjoy it. There's an incredible talk from the Rebbe. It's a Chaf of Fabrengen, 1959. And the Rebbe talks about the words of Shlomo HaMelech that speaks about satiation, puts people to sleep. Having money will put you to sleep. And he says the difference, he talks about Ashidus, the wealth, wealth in money or wealth in Torah. And he says that somebody who's wealthy only in a financial sense, in a fiduciary sense, that person goes to sleep as a result of the money. But somebody who's wealthy from Torah, that person remains awake. And there are many ways of understanding this. On one level, it's when a person teaches a lot of Torah, so then he leaves behind a legacy of Torah. And therefore, his name is constantly mentioned. His teachings are constantly being repeated. And it's as if he continues to live on. And we even have a teaching that the lips of the sage move in the ground whenever his words are being repeated, whenever his teachings are being invoked. But the person that has money, he's dead. Everybody's fighting over the money. And he's just forgotten. So he didn't leave behind a legacy, a spiritual legacy. That's the way to go to sleep. That's on one level. On another level, when a person eats a lot, a person falls asleep. That's the nature. When you're satiated, you get overwhelmed, and a person falls asleep. But when a person has Torah, when you're satiated with Torah, you want more Torah. You don't fall asleep out of it. It's very different from physical and material satiation. And I don't want to go into the whole nuance. It's a long sikha, but one of the points that Rebbe makes is that this both could be true about both. A person can study Torah, and as a result of the Torah they study, they are not any more content, but they use their Torah in a negative way for purposes of self-aggrandizement, for purposes of self-promotion, and that person doesn't find satisfaction in the Torah. And the Rebbe said a person could take his money and turn it into Torah. How? By enabling their wealth to grow Yiddishkeit. So then they continue to live on. Because when Torah is being studied, because when good things, mitzvahs are being done, because of the person's affluence, even the person no longer here, the person lives on because of the good things that they stimulate. Could have left a real legacy. Whereas the person whose Torah was just for himself, was just a selfish trip, so he's gone. The Torah is finished. Anyway, the point is there's wealth on many levels, and ultimately it will depend on how a person chooses to utilize the wealth and the gifts that Hashem gives him. Going back to our subject at hand, the Ben Yehoyada maintains that a person can choose to enjoy his money or not. Everybody has the choice. You can enjoy your money or not. And he says to enjoy your money, to enjoy your wealth is that you utilize the wealth instead of being utilized by the wealth. And the other way around is you don't get to utilize or enjoy the wealth because you're dominated by it. And human nature, incidentally, is such that people are never satisfied, and very few people take the time to proverbially smell the flowers and to enjoy the gifts that they have. And they always want more. And as such, this is what a mayor means when he says, Ezehu Osher, not like Ben Zoyma said. Here he means quite literally, Ezehu Osher, who is wealthy? You want to know who's wealthy? The real wealth is a person who's able to enjoy the affluence that Hashem has given them. So this is one way of understanding this. And the Marsha says something very similar. He says that a person by nature is never going to be satisfied. And because a person by nature always wants more, as the Gemara says, Mi sheyesh leimana, a person who has 100, Reitze, what does he want? Masayim, he wants 200. Then he has Masayim, what does he want? Arba meis, 400. You don't just want more, you want twice as much. So the person who has is never really happy with what he or she has anyway, by nature. So what do you have to work on then? You have to work on finding a way to enjoy what you have instead of wondering why you don't have twice as much. And this, of course, takes discipline. That's not the natural state of affairs. The natural state of affairs is people who would not necessarily utilize and enjoy the privilege of the money that they earned, but instead, they would look to increase it. And so we talk about a life here of discipline, a life of control, where you control the situation or you're being controlled by your circumstances. That's Rabbi Meir's way of understanding the business here of Ezehu Osher, who is wealthy. So going back to the Gemara now. The Gemara does something unusual. The Gemara interjects and it says, Simon Memtes Kuf Samach. So the Mefarshim say that these four words, or these three words, actually should be transposed. It's supposed to be before Rabbi Meir, because this is one of those really important teachings for life, and therefore we are going to focus on four different schools of thought. And I'll soon show you how it's four different schools of thought, but Mem Tes stands for Meir and Tarfon, which is we learn from Meir, we're soon going to learn from Rabbi Tarfon. Kuf stands for Akiva, like the nickname of people whose name is Akiva, they call him Kivi. And then finally, Samach stands for Yoisi. Instead of writing E, they wrote Kuf Samach. So Kuf Samach is Kiva, and Samach stands for Yosef. So that's the matkas over here. This is to remember the four different approaches to affluence and how to deal with wealth. And the Gemara had simonim to remember important things. Things you're always going to bring to mind quickly. So that's how these simonim work. Okay, so now we have the opinion of Rabbi Meir. You want to be considered wealthy, then learn how to be disciplined and utilize and enjoy the wealth instead of being dominated by it. Rabbi Tarfon says, and this can be very strange. He says, want to know what wealthy is? I'll tell you what wealthy is. He says, wealthy is kol sheyesh lei kuf kramim. Wealthy is the person who has 100 vineyards. Umei asadeis, and he has 100 fields. The kuf avadim, and he has 100 servants. Shaivdim bahen. That guy is wealthy. Why? 100 vineyards, 100 farms, 100 farmhands. Now we found a wealthy person. What in heaven is Rabbi Tarfon talking about? What does that mean? When we say, Rashi says, Shaivdim bahem, besodes avayda hatzichem lahem. That this is that he has enough help to work on the fields or the vineyards that this individual has been blessed with. So what does this mean? What is Rabbi Tarfon saying? So some maintain that Rabbi Tarfon uses what's called in Hebrew a guzma. A guzma is hyperbole, a euphemism. People say, like, how much is a lot? Like people say $1 million today. 100 fields. Nobody has 1 million fields. 100 farms. 100 properties. He's got 100 buildings. 100 vineyards. He has got 100 fields. And he's got a workforce of 100 people. And here is then his point. His point would be the person who knows how to manage their wealth. That's who's wealthy. That you know how the right amount of workforce for the right amount of residuals so that you can utilize the residuals well. And this, it's not so different from the teaching of Rabbi Meir, because ultimately, Rabbi Meir also, according to Ben Yehiada, was talking about a person who is not going to become indentured to his money. If a person doesn't hire enough people, doesn't know how to hire enough people and how to manage his team of workers, team of employees, what happens? Who's going to be bearing the brunt? Who's going to bear the burden? Who's going to be overwhelmed by the work? The person. So the person will not enjoy their wealth. The person will be destroyed by their wealth. The wealth will kill him. Like the Mishnah says, marba nechasim, marba daiga. You have many residuals. It only increases your level of anxiety. Just makes you more nervous. And therefore, we have like guzma, a person now 100 fields. He's got 100 vineyards. And he's got 100 workers to be able to do the job. So there are some people who own factories and companies, and they know how to share with the people who work for them. They make sure they have a portion of the stock options, and they, when the company does well, the people do well. And because the employees do well, not just the employees feel loyalty. And even if somebody, a headhunter, comes along and offers them a better package, they don't want to lose what they have. And it is a statistically proven fact that most people prefer job satisfaction over more money. So if people can work at a job that they like working at, or they can work at a job that they hate working at, and then the second job they're going to be getting paid more money, they will invariably choose job satisfaction over the volume of salary. And here we have a person who knows how to treat their employees, who knows how to ensure that the right enough people are hired to do the job. This is a person who manages the wealth. So who is wealthy? The person who manages the wealth. That's who's wealthy. Otherwise, the wealth can kill you, quite literally. It doesn't give you a moment of rest, doesn't give you a moment of peace, and it can literally destroy you. And it does destroy many people. Now, this could also be understood proverbially. I don't remember where I read this years ago, but there was a study done on people who win lotteries, and most of them, several years later, were profoundly unhappy, much more so than before they won the lottery, for a variety of reasons. Amongst the reasons, they did not know, since they came into so much money so quickly, they didn't know how to manage that kind of wealth. So either they splurged and spent everything overnight and ended up being paupers, or they became anxiety-ridden over this money, thinking everybody's out to get them. They didn't have any more friends, any real friends. They thought everybody's a fake friend. Everybody is just needling them. And they don't know how to manage this wealth, this gift. And it changed them as people. They became greedy. They became suspicious. They became discontent and unhappy. And some people even said, I wish I wouldn't have won the lottery. People said, I wish I wouldn't. The money did nothing good for me. So this is the business of knowing how to manage the gifts you get. Affluence means knowing how to manage the gifts. My father once said something to me about celebrities. He said he believes that the reason that celebrities are for the most part so crazy is because once upon a time, people who were celebrities were of upper crust people, people with very broad minds, people with broad abilities, people who had worked to be in a certain position, people of extraordinary talent. He says most celebrities today, what are the celebrities for? Because they have a pretty smile. Because they have a good figure. That's all Hollywood. It's all about looks. So in dealing with people who are basically vacuous, many of these people are empty. They're all about style and no substance. And today you have a level of celebrity that people could only dream of once upon a time. We're literally hundreds of millions of people know you and follow you and worship you. And it can make a person a sugar. So you're dealing with a person, he can strum a guitar. Okay, fine. He has a good voice. He can carry a tune. But it doesn't mean he's a refined person. So once upon a time, people who occupied positions of great power, or people who were able to, because of their talent and because of their efforts, were able to develop and build character. And a person like that could handle celebrity status. But a regular person, a person who's very mediocre, very ordinary, insofar as their stature is concerned, to be thrust into that kind of limelight, it literally makes you meshuggah, drives you crazy. Whatever. Everybody can use whatever names they want, right? But especially in today's day and age where you have this new kind of television personality, now it's reality shows. Talk about extremely mediocre and ordinary people thrust into a spotlight that they simply do not have the ability to suffer a countenance. And the same thing is also true with wealth, that when people fall into wealth or come into wealth and don't know how to handle the wealth, the wealth will literally deconstruct them, take them apart. They will have money, but they will not be wealthy. And that was the question of Gemara. Zehu Osher, not who has money. Has money, what's the question? Just come up with a number and say, oh, Zehu Osher, now you know who's rich. Is it $1 million? Be a millionaire, that's good. Okay, well, now we know. Who's rich? In Canada, if you have $1 million, you're rich. Probably not anymore. So what's the number? What's the magic number in Canada? When do you go into your 49% tax bracket? Is it $300,000, $400,000 a year, whatever? That's when you're considered to be upper crust, and you're considered to be wealthy. The Gemara is not a Gemara question. That's a dollars and cents question. It depends on inflation. It depends which currency. But the Gemara is asking a question which is eternally of eternal value. Ezehu Asher, who is wealthy, not who has a lot of money. Who is wealthy? And the answer is the person who knows how to handle their gifts. And I want to add something. In our day and age, the poorest person has more affluence than the richest person once upon a time had. A running toilet is something nobody could ever imagine. They couldn't even dream of it once upon a time. A car? A cell phone? Imagine 100 years ago, who could afford something like this? Rockefeller didn't have it. Nobody could have it. If you go visit Casa Loma, you see the shower of his day, of 100 years ago. What he called a shower? You would call it a haunted house, right? Today, the simplest shower is nicer. And we have a lot of affluence today. And people are the most unhappy people we've seen in centuries. Why? Because we don't know how to handle our wealth. We don't know how to handle our plenty. Because the focus became entirely on materialism, and there's no focus on spirituality, and there's no focus on character building, there's no focus on ethics, no focus on ethos, and there's no focus on substance, and it's all about style, then indeed you have people who have so much, but really are so poor.
Is this why this is teaching even the poor person? Like the Gemara, that you know, a lot of poor people would read this.
Yeah.
And is the reason that it's all about building, becoming a mensch? Is that?
I like your question, Mark. Your question is this Gemara coming, I think is your question, to kind of offer comfort and consolation to the poor people? I don't think so. I think Ben Zoma came along and said, everybody's wealthy. Everybody's wealthy. You're as wealthy as you want to be.
Or have the potential.
Everybody has the potential to be content. Exactly. Very good. What does the Gemara say? Ein ani ela bedas. You're poor in your own mind. It's how you choose to look at yourself. Look at yourself as a pauper. You're a pauper. Look at yourself as a billionaire. You're a billionaire. Look at yourself. Look, I got a family. I got limbs that work. I'm very rich.
So
Ben Zoma in the Mishnah was speaking to everybody. This piece of Gemara actually is speaking to wealthy people. It is speaking to affluence itself. And it says the question is, what is affluence from a Torah perspective? And the answer is surprising. You know what affluence means? What affluence is, I don't know. Forbes, whoever makes it into the Forbes is rich. I don't know. That's not the Gemara's business to decide who makes it into the Forbes. And so if once upon a time a millionaire was rich, maybe today $10 million is rich. I don't know what rich is. That depends on inflation. It depends on standard of living. It depends on what the average median of people are earning. That's the question of who's rich. We're talking about something very different now. We're talking about who is wealthy.
So what's the lesson to the poor person?
Maybe a poor person doesn't have a lesson necessarily in this. First of all, there's always a lesson. Maybe this is a lesson for people who are rich. But as I said before, Mark, very few people are actually really poor today. We all have affluence that once upon a time people once could dream of, could only dream of. And the average person has it. And I'll tell you something else. When we sitting here in North America are probably in the top 3 or 4 percentile of the world's population. There's so much poverty. There's so much misery out there. The wealth that we have, the poorest of us, eclipses what most of the world doesn't have. And people aren't happy. They're all miserable. So we have so much wealth. We should learn how to manage the wealth. How do you manage it? Manage it. Know how to ensure that things get taken care of without it eating you alive. Now, there's of course, another way of learning this altogether. See, the Vilna Gaon, he is, interestingly enough, he didn't like this whole literal thing. He believed this is all talking about Torah, and it's talking about a different kind of wealth, spiritual wealth. And therefore, his approach was that Rabbi Meir's teaching, Rabbi Tarfon's teaching, they're all teachings about Torah. And he said, who is wealthy then? What would be Rabbi Meir's teaching? The person who has nachas, the person who actually is able to enjoy the Torah that they study, to delight in the Torah that they study. And he says, Rabbi Tarfon's teaching is that according to the Gra, the Kramim, the vineyards, they are symbolic of the kind of Torah which is known as Agada, Midrashic Torah. And he says, Sadais, fields, which is where you produce grain, basic carbohydrates, that which is the cereals that enable people to live. He said, that's the idea of halacha, because without halacha, you can't live. The vineyard is like it says in Chassidus, that the vineyard or the fruits represent the delights of life, the pleasures of life. You can live without grapes. You can live without mangoes. You can live without dates. You can't live without bread. You can't live without basic. These are basic staples. So the vineyard represents that which is a non-basic staple. And the sada represents basic staples. And he says, avadim, servants, represent the idea of blessings. And he said, a person has to know how many blessings to make a day. So the Vilna Gaon maintained that, you know what Tarfon meant? Well, you know who's wealthy? The person who has residuals, Torah residuals, knowledge of the agadic, midrashic part of Torah, homiletic part of Torah, the philosophical, the spiritual, these parts of Torah. And the person who has the literal knowledge of what to do, knows what to do. And finally, the person who makes his blessings on a daily basis. So a person who learns how to count his blessings, and he's got a literal understanding of Torah, he has actual Torah knowledge, and he has proverbial Torah knowledge, that's the person who's considered to be wealthy.
Question.
Yeah.
The fact that he raises these words up, Rabbi Tarfon's words up, into a spiritual mode, is he also rejecting the physical? Is he also invalidating the physical that Rabbi Tarfon?
Right. So you want to know if the Gra himself rejected Rashi's approach. I don't think you really can reject Rashi's approach. And whilst I never heard the terminology pshuta shel Gemara, I don't think there was a terminology, a literal meaning of Gemara, but I don't think you reject Rashi. I don't think it's an option. And we know that there's shivim panim l'Torah, that there are many different facets, or many different ways of understanding and viewing the Torah, all of which can be correct. There could also be 70 wrong ways of looking at the Torah. But they're real Torah ideas. So he's offering a different perspective. Every word of the Gemara can have many meanings. He chose to focus on the spiritual meaning. We know there's ashiras in Torah, there's wealth in Torah, and there's wealth, material wealth. And they're sometimes juxtaposed side by side. And I talked about it before, right? With the way the Rebbe explained, you could have a deficiency in either or virtue in both. So that's his way of explaining the words of Rabbi Tarfon, which are certainly enigmatic. There's no question that Rabbi Tarfon's words need to be elucidated. You know, 100 fields, 100, what does that mean? The next teaching is from Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva said, you know who's a happy man? I guess Rabbi Akiva focused on the happy man. So I'll tell you who's a happy man. You know who's a rich man? He says, Kol sheyesh lo isha noa b'maisim. A person has a good wife. A good wife doesn't mean a gorgeous wife. A good wife doesn't mean a stylish wife. A good wife doesn't mean a socialite wife. A good wife means a good wife, a good woman. And this is like along the idea of the famous question, Eishes Chayil Miyimtso. Who is Eishes Chayil? And Shlomo HaMelech finishes off with the words, Sheker Achein Vehevel Yefi, Isha Yiras Hashem, Mitasalo. It's the values in life that are important. So the person who has a wife that has the right values in life, that person is truly wealthy. Rabbi Yossi says, his words seem even more enigmatic. He says, Kol sheyesh lei beis hakisei samach l'shulchanei. If you have a washroom near the dining room, you're in good shape. Now, if you talk to anybody who needed a washroom at some point, they'll have to agree with you that, yeah, that would be a really important thing. But
this is what he's saying. This is
Rashi doesn't say anything about this, right? So what does this really mean, of course? So we have this idea, the Gemara says elsewhere, that a person shouldn't restrain themselves. When you have to relieve yourself, you're supposed to relieve yourself. And that... restraining yourself causes all kinds of illnesses, and it causes a breakdown, a bodily breakdown. In fact, Rambam says in Hilchos Deos that most of a person's ailments come from restraint, inappropriate restraint. So when a person needs the washroom but doesn't use the washroom, it basically keeps the toxins in the body, and that in turn poisons and destroys the equilibrium in the body, which will ultimately cause illness. So it's really important then to have the opportunity to use a washroom. And I have to tell you that the washrooms as we know them today, both from the quantity and quality of washrooms that have running water and are pretty clean, and washrooms that are quite copious and found all over the place, once upon a time, you didn't have things like this. Once upon a time, like the outhouses were far and few in between, and not everybody had a washroom in the house. And if it was cold outside and you needed the outhouse, that's where you had to go. I can tell you from personal experience, I lived in Russia for a few months, and it was winter, and not every place we went had running water, and not every place we went had what you would call a washroom. And it was extremely disconcerting, uncomfortable, and sometimes you'd faster restrain yourself than use the facilities. But that's really not good, and then it ruins your health. And ultimately, it's like saying, you know who is wealthy? Who is healthy? You have your health. That is your wealth. There was a famous Rishon who said like this. He said, Adam doyeg al ibud damav, a person worries about the loss of his money, v'eini doyeg al ibud yamav, but he doesn't worry about the loss of his days. And he says, damav einam oizim, the money doesn't help make him happy in the end. V'yamav einim chayzim, and the days he loses never come back to you. The time keeps marching. So he says, as lama adam doyeg al ibud damav, v'eini doyeg al ibud yamav. This doesn't help, and this doesn't come back. Time is gone, it's finished. And that's how people are. They're more worried about the money. One wise person once said, the people make themselves sick making money, and then spend the rest of the money on trying to regain their health.
But doesn't the Rebbe say that you shouldn't retire?
Oh, retire is a terrible thing.
So retire...
Who's talking about retirement?
Yeah, but retirement means stopping to work to a certain extent.
No, right? a person should never work to death's doorstep, ever.
That's my point.
Work to death's doorstep? No. I think you're not understanding what I'm saying. You should work gesunter heit 120 years till the day you die. Yes, absolutely, Nancy. But you shouldn't work yourself to death. In other words, being a workaholic and not knowing how to enjoy life because you're so busy making money, that is what we mean when we say that a person has to be enjoying their wealth. It doesn't mean a person should do nothing. People were not built to do nothing. People are built to live meaningful lives.
Some people retire and do nothing, is, I guess.
A lot of people retire and do nothing. And that is tragic. The Rebbe believed that doing nothing was terrible. And it is statistically the greatest killer. People who retire and do nothing will die sooner.
But retire and do something.
But doesn't mean you have to do nothing. You could do other things. Doesn't mean you have to work. A person could go to shul every single day, and a person could learn Torah every single day, and a person could volunteer and help those who are elderly and those who are infirm. There's a way to fill your life with meaningful things. It doesn't have to be a for-profit sector. Somebody could work hard in the non-for-profit sector. The point is living a meaningful life. Retire and play golf all day. Not a good idea. I'll just retire and go fishing. That's ridiculous. People were not built to go fishing 6 days a week and then rest on the seventh. People were built to work 6 days a week and then rest and delight in the Shabbos on the seventh. So that's what the Rebbe means. And here, what the Gemara means is that working yourself to death is actually pointless. So if you want to follow through, you know, the Gra's approach over here, he says, when he talks about the concept of the Midas Tevis of Isha, he says that this refers ultimately to Isha Yiras Hashem Hitisalol, and it's almost like saying, you know who's wealthy? The one who has the right values in life. That doesn't mean having a wife with the values. The wife is, the neshama is like the wife. The point is, a person who has values. You have a values-based life, or you have a capricious life about gain and plenty and winning the race. What's life about? What are your values in life? If you have the right values, you have wealth. And finally, this business of Beisar Kisei, Samach L'Shulchanai. So we're talking here, he says, about a person who would be able to have their material needs met so that they could study Torah in peace. That means to be wealthy. So I want to share with you a beautiful teaching about this different approach, which comes from the Maharsha. The Maharsha says the following. He says, there are three reasons that people spend their life amassing money. Or maybe, let me rephrase that. There are three excuses people will give you as to why they're working all day. You know, the Kotzke Rebbe once said, the Mendel Kotzke said, when is the child that the whole world is waiting for going to be born? So everybody thought he must be talking cryptically about Mashiach. They said, Rebbe, what are you referring to? He said, I'll tell you what I'm referring to. I was a young rabbi. I came to people and I said, come and learn Torah. Come to Shul, come and daven. And what did they say to me? Rabbi, I'm busy making a living. And he would say, you don't have bread on the table? So, no, we have bread, but for the kinder. I have to work for the children. Okay, they're working for the children. He says, then I got a little older, I was middle-aged, I came to the children, I said, come to shul, come learn Torah. And then what they say to me? I have to make a living, we're working. You don't have bread on your table? I have bread for the kinder. He said, I'm up to my third generation now. I asked them, why don't you come and get involved in Yiddishkeit? What's their answer? For the children. He says, I just want to know when that child's going to be born. Every generation is working for the children, so when is the child going to be born already? So the Maharsha says like this. There are three reasons why a person will work himself to death. Number one, he wants to be rich and powerful. It's in his mind, this is the way he'll be famous. This is the way he's going to be able to do things. He's going to build himself a reputation, and everybody's going to know, so-and-so, the rich person said. That's what it's about. It's about self-aggrandizement. It's about arrogance. It's about power sometimes, because people have more money they could ever spend in their whole life. Okay, that's one reason. He said, other people, they'll tell you they're working for their wife. I want my wife to be happy. I need to give her more vacations and 97 pairs of shoes. I need to buy her new jewelry. I just keep my wife happy. That's it. I'm working for my wife. Rabbi, don't bother me. I'm working for my, I got to take care of my wife. And other people, a wife means family. Working, I'm taking care of my family, my children, my wife. Work for my family. How many times I try to counsel couples where the woman will say to me, my husband's never home. He's never home. He never doesn't care about us. He doesn't care about me. He doesn't care about the kids. He's never home. And the husband goes into a rage and he says, I'm never home. Who do you think I'm working for? I'm working for you and the kids. It's all I'm killing myself just for you. So you could go to Jamaica. So you could have that vacation in Bermuda. And the woman says, I'll be happy not to have a vacation. I just want to have you at home. Yay, that's what you say now. That's what you say. But everybody wants, and the kids need and need and need and need. I'm working just for you. So in his mind, he's working for her, working for the kids. In their minds, dad's never home. And this is a very common thing. And he says, the last thing is, people who are always putting money away for a rainy day. I can't spend money now. What if I'll need it someday? And then when I'll need it, I won't have it. So his whole life is miserable. Why? Waiting for a rainy day. What happens when the clouds come out? What happens when things are bad and there's no money then? And the Maharsha says, the truth is that all three reasons are faulty. He says, let's talk about the first reason. The person who wants to be wealthy, the person who wants to build himself up. So Rabbi Tarfon says, you're never going to be happy. If now you're at this level of wealth, that's nothing. A billion. What's a billion? My friend has 3 billion. The other one has 5 billion. You're never going to be happy. And that's why the Maharsha says Rabbi Meir uses like a guzma, like, you know, like a crazy number. Who has, it's like saying a person who owns 100 apartment buildings, 100 condos, and he's got 100 management offices. It's like crazy money. And then he's going to be happy. Rabbi Tarfon's laughing at him. He said, no matter how much you have, who's going to be wealthy? I'll tell you what wealth. Wealth is when I have 100 fields, 100 vineyards, 100 workers. Then you're going to be happy. Then you won't be happy either. Why? Because somebody else has 101. I mean, you could have 200. Why should you be happy with 100?
So no, that's with your interpretation of what he's saying, that he has the understanding of how to use.
Yeah, so I explained the Gemara on a literal level before, and now I'm giving you the Maharsha's pshat in the Gemara. The Maharsha says that the Gemara is like almost answering the three approaches, the three flawed approaches to life. And maybe this is why the siman comes after the words of Rabbi Meir. Because the idea of Person just enjoy the wealth that Hashem gave them. Take the time you have. Whatever you have, enjoy it. Finished. That's one thing. But the next three reasons, namely Rabbi Tarfon, Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Yossi, these three reasons are answering people's flawed approaches to life and money. The one says, I need to be rich and powerful, and then I will be happy. To which Rabbi Tarfon says, fiddlesticks. You'll have 100 fields and 100, and you still won't be happy. You won't be happy. A person who's not going to be happy is not going to be happy with that either. Okay, what's the next thing? It's not for me. It's for my kids. It's for my wife. So Rabbi Akiva said, my dear, you want to be wealthy? Marry a wife who has the right values in life. No b'maisim. That's what would be wealthy. The person, he's getting a family, a wife, or children with a voracious appetite. Whatever he does for them is not good enough. So I have a simple solution. Tell the guy, marry your wife without a voracious appetite. then you'll be happy. So I'm not happy. Why am I happy? A happy wife has a happy life. And my wife is only happy with $50 million. So find a wife who's happy with whatever you have. It's very simple. It's very simple. You have the right values in life. And as to the third one, what happens when it's a rainy day? So the Biyasi says, you know who's wealthy? The person who's got the washroom next to the table. In other words, this was seen in the Talmudic times as the key to good health. Good digestion and good waste removal was seen as the key to health. And really, it hasn't changed that much. Really, here we are thousands of years later, and we still believe that eating well and your body working right is the key to health. So he says, in other words, what happens when it's a rainy day? So try to rule out rainy days. Try to take care of your health. Eat junky food, do all these things. What happens then? How will I live then? So do your best to live a healthy life, and that's it. And then when a person will have all the money in the world, they still won't be able to solve things.
Sometimes the health goes, and you need the dough, and you don't.
Yes, true, my dear. But there are people who have endless wealth, and it still doesn't help them. What was his name? The guy from Apple?
Yeah, didn't help Steve Jobs.
Didn't help Steve Jobs, Nebuch, right? Didn't help Steve Jobs, Nebuch. No. People say, it's just about money. If there's enough money, you find a cure. Right? Here's a guy who had all the money in the world. Didn't give him a cure. So his point is then, don't say, I'll have enough money when enough is put away for a rainy day. Because you never know how rainy it's going to get. And at a certain point, no money in the world is going to be able to solve the problems. So what are you worried about? What if? What if, what if? Now, focus on the here and now. And these are the three answers, so to speak, to somebody who might kvetch or complain or think about the flawed approaches to money. Anyway, we've learned a lot about wealth and lots of food for thought, as they say. And with this, the Gemara returns to the original subject. And the original subject, of course, was fumes and flames, right? About the different things, different kind of fuel, which we should not be using to kindle the Shabbat candles. But we got so carried away with wealth over here that I think we're going to break at this point with affluence. And Bezrat Hashem, in our next class, we'll talk about fumes and flames in Mirtz Hashem.
Thank you.
Thank you.